助けてほしいかナナミ。
Hello and welcome to More Than Headlines, your weekly anime news podcast powered by Audio Technica, made by Australians for global citizens. I'm your extremely humble host, Brenda White, aka the Salt and Pepper Senpai, and joining in the studio, my trusted co-host and rival, the CL, to my Sebastian, Mrs. Courtney Smith. How the bloody hell are ya?
I'm good. I have finally started watching the anime from this season. I'm like slightly a week behind because I was very busy, but I finally started watching, and oh my god, winter 2025 or summer, wait, what season?
We're in spring. You do this every time. We're in spring now. We just got through winter.
Spring 2025 is gonna be amazing. How are you, Brendan?
I'm doing good. I'm worried that you're already like a week behind and we're only like 2 weeks in. So that's a little stressful for me and probably a little stressful for you. Hopefully you manage to right the wrongs and steer the ship in the right direction and you can catch up. But I know you've consumed over a dozen or so anime so far. So that's impressive in itself.
I will say, so I have not, you'll be proud of me, I have not played League of Legends for like 5 days now because I have been watching anime.
That's admirable.
Because I'm trying to stay on top of it.
Yeah, I admire that about you a lot. I thought when you said five, I was waiting for you to say 5 hours. And I'm like, come on now. Like, I ain't giving you no sort of praise based off that. But 5 days, that's really difficult for a LOL junkie.
Yeah, it's hard. And if you're in the Discord, don't check my recent activity because I need to keep up this illusion.
So are you lying to me publicly that you haven't played in 5 days and it has been 5 hours?
No. Okay. So I did play last night, but it was only like one game. But I was mostly watching anime. It's fine.
You know what? This relationship is built on a house of cards. It's built on a lie. I don't know who to trust anymore. I don't know how to feel anymore. Are these responses and thoughts you're going to have on this episode about anime you actually like is actually you really hate them? Like, is it all a ruse? What is going on? I am shook, Courtney. I'm shook.
I mean, when are you not? I'm the anime menace. What do you want from me?
That's true. But I thought you were at least an honest menace, you know? No. Now I know that you're just a dirty liar. Like, that's that's brother, Courtney.
Brother,
like,
yeah. No, It's for the upkeep of the appearance.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'm gonna let you and the Segoy Squad sort of dwell on what that actually means, because I feel we can go down a very dark path if we keep sort of picking at this festering lie-shaped wound right now that we've got going on here. But yeah, we're back. We've got the normal sort of MTH rotation. We're going to be unpacking some news and giving some initial thoughts on this young spring season. I have worked my way through 22... at least first episodes of anime so far. Some I'm a little further down the path thanks to our Crunchyroll hooking us up with some screeners and getting ahead of the pack on a few, which I'm thankful for. But yeah, there's a few that, as Snoop would like to say, I'm dropping like they're hot, Courtney, because they not a good time.
I don't think that's what that means. I don't think Snoop Dogg was talking about bad anime when he said drop it like it's hot.
Well, I'm sort of paying homage to the Snoop here, and that's what we're going to sort of interpret that as. But I guess we could start things off, as we always do, by jumping into the three biggest news stories that we've cherry-picked from this past week. Thanks to our friends over at Iced Tea Aesthetics, where anime meets streetwear. Go cop their fantastic free run drop immediately. And while you're there, be sure to use code SakuraSociety5, that is the number 5, at checkout to save yourself some dollary-dos on the order. But let's start off this news, as we always do. Get your insides ready, dirty liar.
You like the news?
Okay, but I'm not a dirty liar. All right, first of all, I'm not a dirty liar. I just have a League of Legends addiction. It's fine.
We all knew that, though. Why are you denying that you had it? And then you try to be like, I haven't played in 5 days. And we find out you played last night.
First story. Kodansha has announced the nominees for its 49th annual Manga Awards. The nominees are under three different categories. So for Best Shonen Manga, we have Windbreaker, The Fragrant Flower Blooms with Dignity, Kagurabachi versus Orion's Board, and Fermat no Ryori. For best shoujo manga, we have How I Met My Soulmate, The Ayakashi Hunter's Tainted Bride, Fall in Love, You False Angels, and Reliving My Life with a Boyfriend Who Doesn't Remember Me, and Gazing at the Star Next Door. Then for best general manga, we have Under Ninja, Onna no Sono no Hoshi, Space Walking with You, Nezumi no Hatsukoi, and Historie. So there's 16 manga all up being nominated for these awards, and the winners for each category will be announced on May 12th.
Yeah, so in about a month's time, we're going to know who wins. And if The Fragrant Flower Blooms with Dignity does not win, I'm rioting. I'm not telling a lie. This is honest. I am going to go straight to the Capitol and flip over at least one table and throw some pickles from my burger on a window, because it deserves to win everything. It is so great. And I love with these nominees, because obviously we're getting more and more invested and embedded in the manga, manhwa worlds and stuff these days. It's nice to know what's doing the rounds, what's under award consideration, because some of these I've never heard of until sort of just today. So I'm excited to add them to my watch list, or my read list, sorry, consume a couple of chapters, see if it is award worthy, and yeah, see if I can find some new favorites here, because yeah, I've been stuck with so much like power fantasy these days. I need some quieter, softer stuff. And even just looking at sort of the manga art, like How I Met My Soulmate, that's one that I'm sort of leaning towards initially, because I like the art style. It sounds interesting. It sounds fun. So I think that's going to be my first one off this list that I'm going to give a read to this week.
I feel like you're also looking for advice.
Look, you're not wrong. All right. You know, I'm not getting any younger here. I'm just a lonely, bleeding heart hosting an anime podcast. And now I don't even know what to believe anymore after this big League of Legends lie earlier in the episode. So I'm just lost. I need direction. And yeah, if someone can help me find my soulmate and I can do that through manga form for guidance, I'm in.
Well, good luck to you, Brendan.
Thank you.
I personally love the Kodansha Manga Awards and any manga awards, really, because I am primarily an anime watcher, so I don't really keep my finger as much on the pulse when it comes to manga compared to anime. So it's a great way for me to find out about series that are doing well, ones I should be keeping an eye out for, and also things that have been adapted that I've seen the anime of and seeing how popular the manga is. So Under Ninja, for example, I watched the first season of that and I really, really liked it. So seeing that it's also being nominated for an award gives me a lot of hope for a second season.
Yeah, some cool stuff here. Something that is still cool for a lot of people out there, I feel. I don't know much about Dimension 20, but I did drop out of high school. But I didn't actually. I'm just spreading this like the professional I am, because Courtney liked to throw me under the bus. Anyway, in some news that Dropout and D&D fans will adore, Dimension 20's Fantasy High campaign has just received a Webtoon adaptation. The adaptation arrived on Webtoon's English platform on March 31st and is slated to have 61 episodes.
So I'm not a huge D&D fan, despite loving Magic the Gathering, more on that later, but I've heard of Dimension 20 through some friends and I know it's relatively popular. Apparently they sold out Madison Square Garden with their live show of, I think it was Fantasy High or just a Dimension 20 show. And I really hope that the Webtoon is successful, because it's great to see these fandoms collide in different mediums. I was chatting with some of our patrons and other Discord members about Dropout and Dimension 20, and it was great to see that so many of them enjoy it and are keen for the Webtoon.
Yeah, I'm excited for this, and I'm very happy for everybody that is hyped as hell to get some more Dimension 20 and Dropout related content. And I feel that this could be a nice sort of jumping off point for me, because I'm constantly sort of just frozen in place when it comes to working out. Like I love D&D and I love that world. I've played a few campaigns and whatnot, and I want to enter these various worlds, whether it be from Dimension 20 or Critical Role, but because there's just so much content, I'm just like, ah, where do I go? What do I do? I don't know if I can commit to putting hundreds of hours into this. So I feel a 61 episode sort of Webtoon could be a nice toe dip for me. And it's a little easier to bite off and chew as opposed to some of these other campaigns that run, you know, 200 plus hours and stuff. So I'm keen to give it a look. It's nice to know that it's been out now for a little under 2 weeks. So I'll have to add that to my reading list as well.
Yes, and something else that has been out for just over 2 weeks, Devil May Cry. So the Netflix Devil May Cry anime is getting a second season. The first season, like I said, hasn't even been out for a full 2 weeks, and we've already got an announcement that a second season will be coming soon, according to a poster. And according to Anime News Network, the staff had planned multiple seasons since 2021. So we know that this is something that they're really putting a lot into. And the series also debuted at number 4 on the Netflix Global Top 10 list.
It feels indeed like Dante is going to keep on rolling, baby. Because we've got a second season. I'm very happy about this news, and it's cool knowing that we don't have to wait too long. Like, I don't know what too long means in a sense of measuring time, but it feels like we're going to get this second season on Netflix within the next 12 months at a minimum. It feels like they're going to churn these out pretty quickly. I really enjoyed the season overall. I thought it was a fresh yet familiar take on our favorite silver-haired demon hunter. I thought it was enjoyable, it was funny, it was violent, it was stylized, all the things that we've come to love from this sort of video game franchise. So I'm looking forward to seeing what comes next, because we got a few sort of pretty big notable cliffhangers at the end of episode 8. So bring it on. And if you are on the fence about the most recent go around as far as television for Devil May Cry, the More Than Hentai episode with myself and Zombies Love Bacon is available right now on this RSS feed. So I want you to listen to this episode. Go give that a peek where we unpack the first episode and work out if it's worth watching.
So I actually haven't started it yet. It's on my list because it dropped, all 8 episodes dropped at once, of course, as is Netflix's way. So for me, it's a little bit daunting to approach, but I am going to get there. But I was watching last week's Monday Night Raw on Netflix, and I saw a Dante cosplayer in the front row. And like, Dan and I, we were sitting there watching, like, oh my God, there's a Dante cosplayer. But upon closer inspection, it was Adi Shankar. Literally just, he's there cosplaying Dante at the wrestling on Netflix. And we just lost it laughing. What a guy.
I was cackling when I saw this pop up on Raw during the week. And I just love that he is just a little guy. Like, he's a little funky little Dante with his silver haired headpiece, just doing his thing in the red trench coat. And he just owns who he is, and he owns his fandoms. And I don't know if it sort of got any more eyes on the Devil May Cry series on Netflix based off that little cameo on Raw. But like, yeah, kudos to him for giving it a go amongst all those sweaty mouth breathing wrestling fans.
Can you imagine though? Like, you're like, nah, I need to take the promotion for my show into my own hands and like go on another Netflix show character. Oh my God.
And that's ever since Raw has made its way to Netflix, which is great. I love that we've got so much WWE on there now. Like, they just force feed us so many, like, oh, this guy's got a comedic Netflix special and this person's from that. Like, I get it. You want to try and cross-pollinate and cross-promote, but this is the best one so far.
They didn't even mention that it was him, though.
Yeah, they didn't. They mentioned that Devil May Cry was, like, on Netflix, but they didn't say, oh, this is the creator and showrunner and, like, lead man behind this and so many other things on Netflix. They just went, yeah, and here's Dante.
Yeah, it's like Dante cosplay. Okay, bye.
Goddamn Pat McAfee.
Do you not like him?
He's fine, but like, Corey Graves should be in that role. Like, they're using him there, obviously, for the hype and the social pull. Mm. Like, I know we're very out in the weeds as opposed to anime-based discussion right now, but Corey Graves got done dirty pretty hard with Pat McAfee being there.
Very fair. All right, let's get back into the anime track with some rapid-fire news presented by Otaku Box, the only anime box with scale, figures, voting, and ecchi. So our two little rapid-fire headlines today are Maka-in, Too Many Losing Heroines, is getting a second season, and To Your Eternity Season 3 premieres in October this year.
If you'd asked me after I finished the first season of To Your Eternity that we're going to get a third season, I'd be like, hell yeah, this is awesome. But if you'd asked me after I finished the second season, I'd be like, I don't really care anymore, because this show took such a fierce and aggressive dip as far as from my enjoyment and the emotional weight and the storytelling and the pacing. It just felt like two different shows going from season 1 to season 2. Maka-in, Too Many Losing Heroines, one of my favorite anime of 2024. I'm so ecstatic that it's getting a second season, because Anna from that series is one of my favorite new characters. So that brings me much joy. But yeah, To Your Eternity Season 3, I could happily leave that and not watch it.
I have basically the same opinion as you on both of these things. Very excited for one. On the other, Season 3, I think I'll be skipping To Your Eternity from now on.
Sad to say, isn't it? Because that first season, it like rocked my emotions often. Yeah. and in a big way. And then season two, I was just like, I don't care so much anymore. What's going on?
Yeah, but let's get into what we've been watching this week, Brendan, because we've got a new season. And like I said, I'm so, so excited. So I'm going to kick us off, as always. Lazarus, episode one. Oh my God, this ate and left absolutely no crumbs. Despite being an action-packed episode, I was on board the whole time. Watanabe is a genius. I can't wait to see more. But you feel differently.
Yeah, like it might have ate, but it was stale bread with butter. That's what we were eating. Like it was fine. It was enjoyable. And yeah, you could see Watanabe's DNA and vision all the way through this first episode. But I just felt like most of the people we got introduced to were just really unlikable. Like our lead, Axel Gilberto, he's kind of a piece of shit. And yeah, if your first intros to this alleged MC that's going to potentially save the world is a douche and he's like wronging everybody and just being a piece of poo, I'm like, ugh, I'm not really vibing. Like I thought the parkour choreo was really, really well done. And, you know, seeing him sort of fight and move his way through this prison, minor spoilers, as he escaped was really cool. And I like the science fiction elements of it. But right now it's sitting like bang smack in the middle of my sort of rankings at number 12 for my very early yet definitive spring season 2025 rankings. It was fine, but it felt a little safe and a little forgettable at times. And yeah, Axel, kind of a wank. I don't like you very much.
I really liked that he's an unlikable MC, and I think Watanabe does this a lot. He has these really, I guess, main characters that have depth, right? Like, you know, you think of Spike, you think of the guy from Space Dandy? And I think the same is true here with Axel. He, you know, he's in prison. What has he done wrong? He's escaping extra bad. And he's being sassy to everyone. And it's like, it's a recipe for an unlikable, but also three-dimensional character that I like. Because I think we're supposed to not like him so far, which is what I like.
I definitely don't. I prefer the other groupings of the Lazarus team that we sort of get flitting intros to already. But he could redeem himself. Like, I'm going to keep watching it. Yeah, Watanabe, like, he gets a free pass on most things he does, especially for a first episode, but I wanted more. Like, I really like the use of the music. Like, obviously, that's something that Watanabe is known for. Like, we get so many, like, funky jazz infusions and stuff like that. So, had my toes tapping, but I just couldn't buy in like I did with some of the other stuff we'll talk about soon.
Yes. So, I also watched the first episode of Rock is a Lady's Modesty. I think it set up the premise of the show perfectly. Didn't overstay its welcome, was still funny, but interesting, made us curious. And Lilisa, the main character, her hair is so ridiculous.
This is my early number one for the season because exactly what you said, I feel that it just delivered on all fronts. Like what it set out to achieve and showcase as far as introducing us to our leads, introducing us to this prissy sort of higher education world where everyone's so straight-laced and prim and proper. And then we get this crazy juxtaposition between that and like this grunge rock mentality. I was loving it. And I love sort of seeing Lilisa sort of at conflict with herself when she's sort of having this showdown in the band room. And she's like struggling. She, you know, I can't go back to how it was. I can't go back to when I was young and you know, a little rocker. Like I'm prim and proper now. I'm in like high society. And sort of seeing that internal conflict play out via way of a jam session was awesome. And then I loved at the end where Lilisa just gets shit canned, where she's just like, if that's the best you can do, you got to quit. Like you're a piece of shit, double birds, like F-bombs, like we get some curse words. The tone was everything I wanted. And I've got to say too, the animation during the musical scenes, like from what I've seen, they've actually done a lot of mocap with that because you see a lot of the proper work, like on the fretboards of the guitar and, you know, the hand movement on the drums, like it's hitting the right notes that we're hearing. Like, you know, a lot of time with some animated stuff or even just anything with music in general, they'll be doing this and you'll hear 10 different notes, but they just don't move, where there's so much love and care and respect paid to music in this episode. Like I'm in. I loved it. I haven't checked out the seconds, which I think dropped overnight, but I'm going to watch that tomorrow. But it checks every box and it was just so goddamn enjoyable.
Yeah, I really, really enjoyed it starting off very strong. And something else that started off super strong for me was Witch Watch episode one from the first week. I think this is probably my second favorite anime so far this season. It's funny, has a great art style. Nico is so lovable. I love her. And my biggest thing for this is I hope it can keep up that same energy.
It was so, so, so enjoyable. I was cackling pretty much right from the rip all the way through. Yeah, Nico's already one of my favorite characters of the season. Like, she is just all that and then some. I loved her and Morihito's relationship, where you see them obviously from growing up in all these sort of child years, and now obviously she's come back and is bringing on Morihito as her familiar. Seeing her cast some of these spells and sort of what it sort of happens in this episode, like, it's just constant shenanigans and hijinks. And I do like that there is sort of a yin to the yang, as far as Morihito is a little bit more straight-laced. Obviously, like, he's part ogre, so he's very much like gruff and sort of stoic and doesn't show a lot of emotion, where Nico is happy-go-lucky and whimsical and also crushing on Morihito hard. So I love that we get some romance sprinkled in here amongst all this madness. That spell where she casts on herself, where she goes thin and just floats around the town, I was in pieces with how funny it was. Like, it was moment to moment probably the most enjoyable thing I might have watched this season, because I was just smiling, I was happy, it was well animated, and the ending by Yasobi is an absolute bop. Or I guess that could be the opening, they just didn't show it at the start and they've cut it at the end for just a bit of fun. But it was super enjoyable and I'm all in. This is one of my favorites of this young season.
Yes, definitely. I'm so excited for episode two. And I guess my kind of little shout outs for this season, this is actually the first season where I've decided to skip things that I was initially interested in so I can watch the things that are coming out that are more popular and getting a lot of hype. So I've decided to drop Catcher in the Ballpark, Uchujin Mumu, Chuzenji Sensei, Your Former, and Zatsutabi to pick up Sword of the Demon Hunter and To Be Hero X.
That's some big names you're letting go there. Like, especially like Your Former. Did you watch the first episode?
I watched half of it and could not get through it.
Okay, okay. I enjoyed the first episode. I thought it was interesting and there was a good level of intrigue and I liked that world. I'm in a similar boat here, Courtney, because it's only been, 1 to 2 weeks since this season has commenced, and I have lied. I guess that is the recipe for this episode. The theme is lying and not telling the truth, but I'm going to own this one because I said that I was going to sort of hard cap it at 20 anime that I was going to watch this season, and just due to the nature of the beast and my need and thirst for knowledge and having FOMO, I've sort of worked through 23 so far. But like Courtney mentioned, I'm going to be dropping a few of these because I feel that a lot of these episode ones, it's like going on first dates. We talked about trying to find a soulmate earlier, so this weaves in nicely where I'm going out there, I'm going for a coffee or having a meal and feeling it out. And so I'm watching these first episodes, taking them out for a nice beverage or a nice bite and working out if there's something long-term here. And sadly, there's a couple that I've realized just aren't for me. And that is, Catcher in the Ballpark. Sorry, it was nice knowing you, but wish you well. The Dinner Detective and Zatsutabi, they are getting benched. I hope they can find a partner somewhere else out there in the anime universe. And I'm going to be adding to my list The Two Perfect Saints, tossed aside by my fiance and sold to another kingdom. First two episodes, actually really enjoyable and some good romance-based fantasy. And the first episode of Can a Boy Girl Friendship Survive was funny as hell. I really enjoyed it. I was pleasantly surprised by that one. So they are getting added to my list because I had a good time and we've got a bit of a love triangle in Can a Boy Girl Friendship Survive already. And Himari, as our lead female MC, she's on a similar level to Nico from Witch Watch, where she's got that same sort of cheeky vibe that's just fun and infectious. So I'm dropping a few as well, Courtney, but picking up a couple.
Is a boy girl friendship harami, or is it just like kind of pure rom-com? Okay.
Like, I've only seen the first episode, or was it one or two? I can't remember, but I've seen whatever's out as of yesterday. And it feels like obviously we've got the best friends, will they, won't they, but they have just introduced another female into the story, which could lead to some conflict, named Inochi. but I don't know if there's going to be more women folded in that's going to start to crush on our lead man, Natsu, here. But I'm vibing it. It's an enjoyable watch, and there were some genuine laugh-out-loud moments, especially when Inochi and Himari have like a physical fight and a bust-up. Like, it is so great and so funny, and exactly what I was looking for.
Okay.
Yep. But, yeah, as far as ones I wanted to shout out that I have watched and will continue to watch, Sword of the Demon Hunter, you mentioned that you're going to be adding this to your weekly rotation. Holy moly, what a debut episode, Courtney. I love that we get like 50 minutes worth of world building and character development in this first episode. And I feel it was perfectly paced, and it really told a complete story during this first episode as well. And it delivered big time emotionally. Like, I'm avoiding spoiling anything because a few of these things that played out really did come out of left field and took me by surprise and really hit me in the feels. But I was very much invested in this world right from the opening scenes, like seeing Jinta, his sister Suzune, and then Shirayuki. They're a really great trio that we grow to know and love throughout this first episode. And we sort of see them growing up together in the village of Kadano. I think it was really great. The village and the scenic shots were gorgeously animated as well. Like, the vibe in sort of the Demon Hunter, really, really positive, really peaceful. But obviously we've got this added element where, you know, this world is co-inhabited by demons. So people have to go out and hunt the demons to keep, you know, the tribe and various villages and things safe. We sort of see at the back end of this episode, Shirayuki becomes the shrine maiden and Jinta actually becomes her shrine guardian, which is kind of cool to see. And there is sort of some forbidden romance that's tied into that, where clearly they've been friends and care about each other for so long. But obviously she needs to be the pure of heart, sort of bastion of peace and hope and love to the village. And Jinta is just seen as nothing more than, I guess, a bodyguard, I should say. So I was really vibing the love in there. I was really vibing the combat. We get some really cool fight scenes. And like I said, some of the emotional payoffs that happen at the end of this first episode, like, it's not like a like for like, but I finished this first episode feeling similarly to how I did after watching Oshinoko season 1, episode 1, where we get just this long form, well-paced, impactful storytelling. Similar vibes here. And yeah, it's my number 2 currently of the season because it was just so good.
I am going to watch it after we record this episode, and I am so excited. Already I was excited to watch, but after that description, I'm even more excited.
Yeah, and then obviously we've got the time travel element that plays a part in this too. I'm not going to go into spoilers, but I feel that this first episode is some of the best table setting we'll see this season. Like, it's done obviously in sort of greater detail because we get a 2.5 episode sort of runtime worth of episode 1, but so good, so good. Something else that's so good and also took me by goddamn surprise, To Be Hero X. I totally forgot about this coming out this season. Like, it was not on our respective watch lists. I had a few chats the last couple of months and just somehow just totally forgot it and totally missed it. But my goodness gracious, Courtney, this 2D, 3D manhwa hotness is everything in a bag of chips. Like, this first episode is stunning. The fight choreography is some of the best we'll see this season. The voice acting, because we've got a day 1 dub and sub, depending on which way you want to go. Fantastic. Love the art style. Love the animation. The easiest way to describe this is think of superheroes done in the Arcane universe with a Chinese flair. And it is some of the prettiest stuff we're going to see all this season. I don't doubt that. And it is sitting, I think, at my number 3 for the season, because that first episode blew me the hell away.
It blew some other people the hell away too. No spoilers, but my God, what a story as well. What a premise that, you know, in this world of superheroes, you know, the big great guy that everyone loves, this isn't a spoiler because it's in like the first 2 minutes of episode 1, but he jumps off a building and
commits suicide.
Like, yeah. And it's like, all right, well, you're the new hero now, go. And you know, we just see, and it's so fast paced, like the way it all works. And I kind of love that. I love that we're not spending all this time setting up all these characters. Like, we're just into it and you're just expected to sit and watch and say thank you to the heroes.
It's so good. And it's really accurate and I won't say relatable, but like you can see the social commentary they're having regarding these heroes being celebrities and the status. And yes, they have to be cookie cutter and look and act a certain way. Like it is a really cool observation on Hollywood and just the celebrity sort of archetype in general. But then you tie in the superhero element of it and all this sort of fake wishy-washy nonsense behind what sort of plays the part of, like Courtney said, like the lead and decides this is all too hard for himself straight off the building in the opening minutes. And you think at first, okay, he's going to jump off and fly away. No, you hear the body hit and you realize, yeah, this sort of character gets sort of typecast. His superhero name is Nice, which makes me cackle. Like the naming convention of these characters isn't the best, I will say. But outside of that, everything else is done at such a high standard. Like it is some of the prettiest stuff you'll not only see this episode, but it is up there. Like I mentioned, like it is the anime version of Arcane. And I mean that in like the nothing but the best and most highest of praise.
Yeah, truly something to watch, keep an eye on. It's looking like it's going to be pretty outstanding.
Yeah, like it is currently scoring 8.53 on my anime list. And I've got to shout out to the opening and the endings. Inertia and Continuum are the two songs. They are also like toe-tapping humpers. And yeah, add them to your playlist as well. But yeah, this is, like, I don't know if saying a surprise packet is the right thing, because I think it has a lot of hype behind it out there in the interwebs. But at least for me on this show, like I did not see this coming. And I'm so happy I gave it a chance because yeah, everything is just 10 out of 10 quality. And if it can keep this way throughout this first season, like I'm so in, so in. Yes. And yeah, it's like a 24 episode first season. So we're getting a lot coming our way. Like I can only imagine the amount of money that this series takes to create, because man, it is stunning.
I love it.
Me too. Me too. And I also want to quickly give some shout outs to Windbreaker season 2, episode 1. It just starts, like, minor pun intended, like it just starts with a punch to the face. Like it is just all gas, no brakes this first episode, and we see the brawl between Bofrin and Kiel play out in this warehouse. It is so hype, so exciting, and also something that I had like tepid expectations on was new Mobile Suit Gundam. So G-Quax is out. I watched the first episode overnight on Prime Video, and I really, really, really enjoyed it. They're both sitting at 6 or 7 out of my 22 that I've watched so far in my rankings. It's gorgeously animated. Love the characters, love the premise. And yeah, if we can continue with this quality, I'm so down.
Yeah, first episode of Windbreaker really just was like, you finished watching the last season. All right, you're watching this season now. Let's go. Like no recap, which I loved. And Mobile Suit Gundam Quacks on my list. But we also received some manga from Wizards of the Coast and Viz Media, Destroy All Humans, They Can't Be Regenerated, Volume 3. I've been loving it. The fact that we are getting real Magic the Gathering games and romance, like actual good romance, perfect chef's kiss, love it. Once again, thank you to Wizards of the Coast and Viz Media for sending us copies of the manga.
It's such a good, enjoyable, entertaining read. And like you said, seeing a fandom collide with some romance elements, it is a really, really easy tale to enjoy. And like we've mentioned, Destroy All Humans, They Can't Be Regenerated in earlier episodes, but as sort of a person that stands on the sidelines a lot when it comes to magic, this manga and this story has just been a really nice way for me to get introduced to the world and the concepts and understand a little bit more of how this all comes together. So it's sort of taking a little bit of the feeling of daunting that I've sort of been carrying around with me when it comes to magic for a long time. So yeah, it's a great read and I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah, and it's, the art style is so pretty.
Mm-hmm. Very so clean. Pretty. Very clean. I guess shifting into the seasonal focus anime that we're talking about here, we're going to weave in again to telling false truths here, because we lied about this, because this was meant to be Witch Watch. It was also going to be the beginning after the end, but we've sort of realized with the way that some of these seasons are running, anything above 12 episodes is going to then bleed into the following season. So we've had to pivot and pivot again. So yes, we did tell lies. We told some fibs there regarding those two. Apologies about that. But we have actually settled on Kowloon Generic Romance as our focus anime of the 2025 spring season. Shall we jump in and recap this great first episode?
Let's do it. I am so excited.
It's so good. Spoilers. So the first episode opens. We're introduced to Reiko Kuraji, who she is our main character. I immediately started crushing on this girl hard. She's just got a vibe that I am 100% here for. And so she takes us through her morning routine. We see her waking up in her old, dusty, yet slightly charming apartment in Kowloon. We see an ad for Hibamuna Pharmaceuticals playing on the TV as she cuts herself some delicious looking watermelon and then goes outside for a smoke. Minor sort of X there with the cigarettes, like not a big smoker guy, but anyway, I can forgive you, Reiko. We're then thrown into a really fun opening that cuts together various shots of Kowloon. We see some shots of our MCs and we get like a pretty heavy serving of science fiction in this opening as well. And that's really nicely accompanied by a song called Summertime Ghost, potentially foreshadowing there with the song title, by Tsuyubi no Campanella. So the opening scenes introduce us to Reiko, big fan of her, love the art style already, like that 90s throwback vibe, Courtney. Like we were talking earlier about like eating well and leaving no crumbs. This art style is doing all that and then some.
Yeah, I am already obsessed. And interestingly, the thing that I think really draws me to this series is the fact that it's set in Hong Kong, Kowloon to be specific. You'll notice that the city is pronounced as Kuron in Japanese. That's how the characters are saying it because of the kanji, which means nine dragons, which is a really cool little note, I guess, to make. And this series, I didn't know this, but I was doing some reading and it's set in a real place. It That's used cool. to exist in the 80s and 90s. And was called Kowloon Walled City. And it was in history the most densely populated city in the world. It was notorious for having no government, no laws really, and a lot of triad activity and a lot of illegal things going on.
That's cool. Which,
yeah, it's very cool. And you'll notice anything that kind of has this vibe of like a grimy, old, really densely packed city. Usually it's actually based on Kowloon.
That's cool.
Which is really cool.
It makes you wonder how much of this real world city will play a part. Because I've obviously read any of the original story that this is based on. But if we're going to see some of that sort of blend and bleed into this this story as the episodes start to come out. I love that it's based off real place with some real notorious and I guess infamous history.
Yeah. So we see Reiko on her way to work at the Wong Loi Realty Company. On her way, she walks past a TV explaining generic terror, which is created by Hibamuna Pharmaceuticals, which backs up the memories of humans and is seen as this great new thing. But then we also see this ominously shaped creature or structure in the sky, which is reminiscent of the angels from Evangelion. And Reiko gets to work late because Kudo, I have a crush on him, very hot co-worker, pushes in at the last minute to clock in before her.
Of course you do. Of course you do.
You have a crush on Reiko. I only said it because you said that.
No, that's fair. That's fair. But like the first introductions to Kudo, I guess same as first introductions to Axel, which you liked earlier in Lazarus, they're not the most positive first intros we get here. As an aside, I can never not smile when I see those old-timey punch cards getting used in anime or video games or film or whatever. It's just, I don't know what it is. There's just a part of me where I kind of wish that I got to experience that like one day because I don't know. There's just something about it. There's just this weird immediate nostalgia touchstone hit that sort of triggers in me. But anyway, screw you, Kudo, because that was super rude. Makes Reiko clock in a minute after 9 o'clock. So luckily they seem to have a really nice understanding boss and he, you know, she doesn't get put over the coals for that. But yeah, bit of a dick move there, Kudo. But anyway, so Kudo tries to sort of redeem his transgressions here, invites Reiko out to lunch as a way to apologize. But she then gets annoyed because he takes her to the usual spot, which is known as the Tin Tin Eatery. Food looked right there, by the way. But she wanted to check out this new Hawaiian restaurant that's just popped up sort of downtown. Like she was like really intrigued by it. The menu's different. It's got a cool vibe. But yeah, he sort of dismisses that, takes her to Tin Tin. And once they're inside, they sit down at the table and then she puts in the Hibamuna Pharmaceuticals eye drops because she's starting to have trouble with her prescription because she's wearing glasses. Kudo then yells at her because the son of the company has now taken over Hebunuma Pharmaceuticals. And, you know, he can no longer trust the company because the son was up to all types of alleged sketchy business practices while he was running the Hebunuma Beauty Center. So you're like, okay, I can see where this potential could be taking us down the line regarding, you know, big pharma and bad business and what do these eye drops have to play here. So anyway, Kudo then tries to say, you know, stop with the eye drops. Don't worry about it, Rico. All you've got to do is like massage the pressure points and that'll take away the pain you're sort of suffering right now regarding your vision. Reiko does not want a bar of that and quickly sort of dismisses him, pushes him away, tells him he's an idiot. And, you know, that's the end of the scene.
And so it's interesting, though, because even though you're like, screw you, Kudo, bad guy, we actually end up kind of seeing his more playful side. He explains to Reiko that, you know, the reason he does this job is that he wants the residents of Kowloon to live comfortably. As we know, it's a very cramped and old area. And then he tells Reiko, he's like, look, we're not going to go for tea. I know we have a bit of extra time. Go to the optometrist. Okay, go get your eyes checked out, see what's going on. And then as he is on his way back to work, he starts playing hopscotch with some kids on the street. So we get this really, I guess, like playful air to him, which I really, really like. Then Reiko comes back from her optometrist appointment and the boss is like, what's up? And she's like, I have 20/20 vision. And the boss is like, well, congrats. I think you look better without glasses. And then Kudo is like, no, I actually prefer the glasses. But is it the glasses or is it the conflict? Who knows? We then get a scene with Kudo and Reiko where they're up on the roof burning files. Not suspicious at all. Just going to ignore that one. We then see the giant structure in the sky that was created by Generic Terror again, which Kudo is alleging that they're using their tax money on to create a fake Earth.
Yeah, so there's so many questions that are just sort of starting to formulate in my head as this episode goes on. Like, yeah, seeing the big monolith in the sky that, you know, gets talked about but not really addressed directly, and the fact they're building a fake Earth and all that. I'm like, man, I've got so many questions. I feel like I'm in that movie with Matt Damon that name escapes me right now. What was that? Bog Titanic? Average science. Nah, Matt Damon wasn't in Titanic.
Oh, whoops.
You were close. Anyway. He was in a sci-fi movie regarding, like, you know, the higher-ups living, I guess, below the poverty line. And that's what it sort of made me sort of flash back to in this scene there. And, yeah, seeing them, like, burning these files just nonchalantly with no context, I'm like, I wonder if this is going to get addressed or brought up any way, like, in the future, because that seems a little shady. It seems a little dodgy. But they're just like, yeah, no worries. Yep, hide these tax results and these audits and da-da-da, whatever. But anyway, as they're up there on the rooftop, Reiko brings up the Hawaiian eatery again, and she starts sort of reflecting on how she feels is not going to be around for long because nothing new ever lasts in Kowloon. So you're like, oh, okay, what does that mean? And then Kudo starts getting reflective on Kowloon in general, talking about that it's a nostalgic place and that the feeling of this city is the same feeling as being in love. And you're like, okay, like I'm sitting there going, yeah, nostalgia can have that sort of nice, you know, sugar-coated vibe to it. So I get it. And I feel it's a really nice moment. And it was very well paired with like this really subtle string-based musical accompaniment in this scene. And it just really sort of added some more weight to these sort of reflective and deep moments we're having between our two leads here. Reiko then mentions that she too sometimes feels the sense of nostalgia. But we see the second those words come out of her mouth, Kudo's like, oh shit, like, what? Like, doesn't say anything, but you can see it in his face that he's panicked when he hears those words. And so you're like, okay, what's going to happen here? But that panic then quickly gets replaced by something else, I think, because we see after this panic he gets like right up in her face and you sit there and go, oh, is a kiss incoming? Are these two lovers and it just hasn't been announced yet? What's going to happen? But nope, instead he's like right up, like sort of almost nose to nose looking at her, and he goes, oh, you've got crow's feet. And you're like, Kudo, you son of a bitch, you son of a bitch. And then we jump ahead to the next day and we see Reiko is wearing glasses, even though she doesn't need them anymore due to the 20/20 vision. And I'm like, is this due to Kudo saying he actually prefers them as opposed to the no glasses look? Question mark.
Oh, look, if it were me, yeah, I'd do it.
You'd be in glasses 24/7.
Yeah. But we see that Kudo's cuff on his shirt is dirty due to his quirk, which means he has to touch any number 8 that he sees in the world. Then we get a quick cut of the night sky and the generic Terra monolith again. Reiko and Kudo finish up work and head out together, with Kudo telling Reiko he's going to truly teach her about what makes Kowloon, Kowloon. And we then get a montage of them eating and drinking their way around the city. The final stop of the tour sees them end up at Goldfish Tea House, which we quickly discover Kudo is a regular at. Reiko is enamored by the giant fish tank as they both order iced coffee, which arrives with some of the house watermelon. As they both smoke inside, Reiko gets that same sense of nostalgia and mentions that a cigarette is best after eating watermelon.
Yeah, I don't know if I agree with that. Like, obviously, non-smoke. Love watermelon, don't get me wrong. Maybe they do complement each other really well, but I do love that we're starting to see these little cutaways to that monolith in the sky from Generic Terra. Like, it is a constant in this first episode. And even though it's not moving, it's not making any noise, like no one's talking in there downstairs or anything like that, it's just got this really ominous presence about it. And so I love that it's creating this sort of like almost subdued tension. Like every time I'd see it on the screen, I'm like, ooh, this isn't good. Something bad's going to happen due to this. Like, I don't like this. I don't like the people tied to this business. I don't feel good.
No, it's very interesting.
Yeah. So after we get this random line about, cigarettes and watermelon going hand in hand together, Kudo mentions that he remembers someone else who said that once, which obviously naturally shocks Reiko because that is a very unique thing and observation to make. Kudo then goes on to explain that even though it is a weird statement, he likes little quirks like that, because it helps him remember those specific and special people. And you're like, okay. Yeah, has Kudo experienced a major traumatic event? Has he lost a loved one? Who else also loves having cigarettes and watermelon? Because I don't think there'd be too many running around Kowloon. Who the heck knows? So as they're leaving the Goldfish Tea House, the waiter then says how great it is for Kudo to bring his girlfriend here again, which obviously naturally confuses Reiko and sort of gets her a little bit shocked of the situation. As they leave, Reiko questions Kudo about it, saying how awkward it'd be if he actually does bring his legitimate girlfriend here another time. And I guess they confuse Reiko with girlfriend X, et cetera, which he then quickly says there's nothing to worry about. So you're like, what skeezy stuff are you up to, Kudo? Like, you're two-timing, you're taking many girls to the Goldfish Tea House. Like, what's your angle here, fella? But we see here Reiko stops and she's starting to reflect on this whole sort of situation that just played out, looking up again to the night sky, staring at the monolith, very much lost in thought. And again, like, I'm like, it's a nice sort of peaceful moment, but still this sense of eeriness attached to it, because that monolith, just bad juju coming from that thing, Courtney. Bad juju. Kudo then returns back to Reiko, and he's been busy the last, like, I guess, minute or so. Nips off, and he comes back with a goldfish that he bought her as a souvenir of the evening, which I personally feel is a dick move. You should never buy any form of pet for somebody without their approval, because that's a life you've got to then, you know, keep safe and cater and deal with. Like, dick move, Kudo. Like, I'm telling you, like, not many positive checkboxes met with Kudo this episode.
I really liked this scene in the tea house. I think we obviously got a lot of clues as to what might be happening here and what the relationship is between Reiko and Kudo, which is really, really interesting. There's a lot of symbolism and I'm loving it. But the next scene, Reiko's back home looking somber as she reflects on the night and what was said. The next day, she's painting one of her company's rental apartments, suffering from the heat and the lack of aircon. She faints, only to be caught by Kudo, who finishes painting the last wall as she takes a seat and sips on some oolong tea that he bought her, and thinks about how she's in love with him. And I cannot stress this enough, the way he caught her, the way they drew and animated that little scene, that panel, was, oh my God, I was literally like blushing. I was like, oh my God, like,
it was, she's fairy tale vibes, right?
Right, like, and she's like sweaty and like wearing a singlet and really tired, and he like catches her and his like arms around her way.
And then the line he drops in where he's like, you know what? The hero always arrives late. Like, yeah, he's got the charm and the machismo in spades in this yes. episode, and as, particularly in that scene, because, yeah, it's gorgeously shot. And, yeah, very, very heartwarming. And yeah, then I just, it's crazy that she's sitting there sipping on this tea and then she's just in her inner monologue, just be like, I'm in love with this guy. And you're like, whoa, okay. Did not expect that, but I'm here for it.
I mean, obviously, like, she wore the glasses for him. Like, you know, she kind of lets him do what he likes. But then suddenly we get the ending credits. And after that, though, we get to the next day and we see Reiko arrive at work to find Kudo asleep in the back of the office. She wakes him up and in the most perplexing, I will say, moment this episode, he wakes up, grabs her, starts making out with her, then apologizes and says he thought she was someone else.
Ridiculous. Consent always, first and foremost, because you can see, like, she's fighting this at first. Like, she's trying to get off him and he's got her, like, locked in, laying on this big old smooch. And yeah, then he just deadpanly gets up and he's like, sorry, you know, I thought you were Mary Sue from accounting or whatever, you know, like, so I'm weird. Like, what is going on?
Like, just really straight after the episode we've just had, for then there to be credits and then this scene, I was shook.
I love a good post-credit stinger. And luckily, like, they roll these credits early and we get like another 4 minutes worth of content here. And so we're sort of looking at things later in the day now. Kudo decides to head out and grab some lunch while Reiko's still obviously reflecting on the kiss and what happened that morning. We see then some files sort of fall off Kudo's desk because obviously he's a bit of a messy boy and there's stuff just littered everywhere in his little workspace here. And we see, as she's starting to like pick up a few of the files and tidy things up, we see a photo just randomly sort of half poking out of one of the desk drawers. And it's of Kudo. And Reiko here is hesitant to sort of pick it up and look at it because she's like, I guess, knowing in this moment it's probably going to break her heart and her dream is going to be shattered because it's obviously going to be of Kudo and the girlfriend we allude to that he's got from mentioned throughout this episode here. And so she picks up the photo and takes it with her and she starts sort of walking through Kowloon. She ends up back at the Goldfish Tea House, reflecting and confused on the photo. The same waiter from earlier in the episode arrives, serves Reiko, notices the photo and just casually mentions that he was actually the one that took the photo as Kudo and Reiko were there on this night celebrating their engagement, which obviously Reiko cannot remember anything about. She's still trying to process everything that's playing out here because she's in shock that she's now allegedly or maybe once upon a time was engaged to Kudo, yet does not like remember any of this. We get some really cool imagery here where we see, because like the backdrop from the table that she's sitting at here by herself, but also when they went on the date earlier, massive big sort of glass fish tank beside it, really gorgeously animated, a lot of fish floating around doing their thing. But we see one of the goldfish, like in some imagery here, float to the surf and is dead. And we get this really quick flash of Reiko sitting at the same tea house, but the tea house is destroyed. I don't know if it's blown to bits or what's going on, but like the fish tank has blown up. There's a hole in the wall. Everything looks like it's been on fire. And the episode ends here, Courtney, with Reiko sort of asking herself, Kudo, who was it that you kissed? As the sort of screen fades to black. And I'm like, I've got so many damn questions. There is so much mystery here. I love these characters. I love this world. I love this 90s art style. I want more and I need it now.
God, it was just so good, so intriguing, and littered with like references and symbolism and even like the lines that they spoke, there was meaning in everything, and trying to kind of pick that apart was so fun. And I want more now.
Me too, Courtney. And I love that it's like, even though I've never watched an anime exactly like this, like there is a lot of similarities to sort of anime from yesteryear. Like it's got massive like Ghost in the Shell vibes, Evangelion vibes, all the cool stuff from the 90s. But it also makes me think of a lot of the action and like action romance movies I watched in the 90s, whether it be Eastern or Western. So it feels familiar, but feels completely brand new at the same time. And I love the amount of mystery and intrigue that they've kept spoon feeding us in this first episode. Like, I've got so many questions and so many things I want to know, like, you know, what's happening with this bloody monolith in the sky and why can't Reiko remember that she was potentially is or once upon a time engaged to Kudo? Can Kudo remember? Is it all a ruse? Is he sort of like acting the part? Like, I've got many, many questions. I'm excited to sort of see all these questions slowly get answered throughout this season because, yeah, this is a surprise humper of the season for me. Like, it's sitting in my top three. I'm loving it. I can't get enough of it, and I'm excited for it.
Yeah, it's definitely, at the moment, probably my favorite this season so far.
Yeah, and rightfully so. A lot of people we know out there have been sort of singing its praises so far because it is phenomenal. So, yeah, that is our episode one deep dive on Kowloon, which is nothing but fantastic good times. And I hope it can stay this same type of consistency. And I hope this romance is anything but generic.
Yes.
It feels like it's anything but generic.
Truly. But let's get into some final comments to our new and old listeners, of course. Make sure you join our Discord so you can also discuss things like Dropout and wrestling with us. We had a great chat last night about those two things. We're always active, always happy to chat, whatever you want to talk about. We also have a Patreon that you can join to find out the latest updates about when we're recording our next episodes and going live. If you are in the top two paid tiers, you get access to being a live audience here in the Segoia studio with us.
Yeah, get to see behind the curtain and see how the sausage is made, so to speak. It's it's exciting. It's behind the scenes content that you'll not find anywhere else on planet Earth, and I promise it's well worth your time. Who doesn't love sausage? Anyway, Courtney, I also wanted to shout out to everybody that has been consuming our video-based content as of late. We're sort of trying to do a bit more of a focused effort on the video piece of what we're doing here, releasing more of these episodes in long form on YouTube, as well as short form content on TikTok and Instagram. If you aren't following us on those platforms yet, please go and do so once you're done listening to this episode. At the Sakura SOC on those socials and on YouTube, you can find us there. And yeah, chuck us a little subscription, chuck us a like on the videos you see, and a cheeky little comment, because we want to get in and up all around that algorithm and hopefully get this content and this great community that we're all building here together to as many people as possible. So thank you for everyone that's already doing that. But the ones that aren't, what the bloody hell are you doing? Come on, seriously. But Courtney, that brings us to the end of episode 44 of More Than Headlines. We are in the season of spring now, not summer, not winter. Winter is done and dusted.
Sorry. I just want to also give a shout out and big thank you to our producers, Orny Duffo and Matthew C. We appreciate you. Without you, we would not be able to keep things running as smoothly as they are here over at Sakura Society. We love you and appreciate you.
Yeah, you help keep the literal and physical lights on in this place. So thank you from the bottoms of our big old hearts. But yes, listeners, viewers, Segoia Squad, whether you'll be anime, be subbed, dubbed, or still yet to come, enjoy yourself and much love to all the gorgeous waifus and husbandos out there. Goodbye.
Mata ne.